Hello and welcome to episode 77 of Nutanix Weekly. I'm your host for today, Phil Sellers, Solutions Architect here at Zentegra. I have a great slate of folks joining me today. We've got Harvey Green, CEO of Zentegra Gov. Harvey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hanging in there. It's Monday, but we're almost to the point where we've survived the Monday.
Yes. Yes.
So got our friend.
Good to cap it off this way.
Yeah, it's a good way to cap it off with some good friends from our Nutanix team. We're joined with Jaira Cox. Jaira, how are you?
Philip, good, man. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you too. We've also got Ben Rogers with us. Ben, how are things going?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you doing? It's been an episode or two since I have been here, but doing well. And thank you guys for having me back.
Yeah, welcome back. We've had a few episodes that the great Ben Rogers hasn't been able to join, but we're trying to keep things going. Ben, what's been keeping you busy out there?
Well, just my day-to-day job, you know, trying to service my customers and look at what their needs are, especially from a sales mentality of where they're pushing the envelope. And, man, I've been going to a few tech events trying to learn myself. I had the pleasure of sitting down with one of our leaders last week for dinner, Pi. And if you've ever had the chance to meet Pi, Pi is our technical evangelist. But more importantly, what he gets to do is he gets to talk to customers. He gets to kind of see where trends in the industry are going. So as we get in this topic this afternoon, I follow it real interesting that my dinner really was around. I asked him, you know, where is this ball moving and where are companies really trying to leverage our products to make sure that they have success in the future? And to my surprise, you know, a lot of it's around API, you know, I mean, how we can digest and ingest API infrastructure and automate that. And then, you know, man, our database and just the core of, you know, what we do best is data and how we handle the zeros and ones and kind of how the birth of our product has come out of that strong goodness of, you know, our data control. And as you look to the future where you're looking at AI, data governance, where you have machines in the background that are going to have some kind of policies and rules of regulation where they can replicate data and guard data. When you sit down with some of our leadership and you kind of dig into where this ball is going, you really quickly find out how fascinating our product set is. And so it was something that, man, I was glad that I had the pleasure to sit down with a mind like Pi so that I can get myself wrapped around the axle of where things are going and what kind of the next generation tools that are coming out, not only with AI, but with data governance, automation, all these things. And you really begin to be thankful that you work for a company like this that's kind of tackling these next generation problems and putting some sense around it. So kind of wanted to do that as a trailer of our conversation today, but also, you know, what have I been into? And a lot of what I've been into is trying to make sure we're meeting our customers' goals today, but understanding where our customers are going, and better yet, understanding the technology that our company is developing to meet those goals.
Yeah, Harvey.
Long-winded answer, but there you go.
Harvey, it reminds me of a conversation we're having with a research organization along with Zentegra. You know, it is about the data. It's about data sets and being able to automate those data sets. I mean, you know, you're looking at how we can use Nutanix in those ways. Anything that you'd want to tag in there as well?
I mean, plenty. If we keep going like this, we'll never get into it. But ultimately, you know, the conversation that Ben was just having around it being about the data, very much so in the category of research and, you know, making sure that things are secure, but also enable the users to go and do what they need to do around the data and pulling insights from the data. So there's a whole lot that goes into that, but I won't belabor the point. I'll let you get in there.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot of things. It is the security aspects of it, which Nutanix can deliver on. It's the access to the data, which Nutanix can deliver on. And then it's also, you know, just the ability to be able to decipher and run workloads around that data that help us solve really interesting problems for customers. And I think that's the huge win here is that it is a full breadth solution that we can present and be able to really drive value for research organizations, healthcare organizations, universities, things like that. So pretty stoked about it.
Yes.
You know, I do want to go ahead and throw in our tagline, a little bit of an advertisement here at the front of the podcast. You know, this is new for some of our podcasts, but really what we're trying to do here at Zintegra is podcasting with context. That's why we love the conversations about what's going on in the real world, what our customers are asking for, how we're using the technology to be able to deliver great solutions, great outcomes for our customers. And that's the difference. We're taking an article, a blog post, but we really want to wrap it with that context of how we're leveraging this in the real world. And on that same note, you know, if you're working with a partner that is not giving you that kind of advice, that's not really giving you advisement, then maybe you're working with the wrong partner. And we'd love a chance to talk with you. So, you know, that is our shtick here at Zintegra. We're trying to bring real world experience to our customers. We're trying to add value to their world. So if you're not partnered with a value added reseller that is doing that sort of activity and adding value to your world, reach out, give us a call. We'd love to work with you. So that's the end of the ad. Today, Jaira, you've brought to us a blog post for delivering enterprise grade edge AI and ML with Nutanix. Why did you choose that topic today?
I think it's exciting. I think it's super. I shouldn't say exciting again. It's it's top of mind, right? So it comes up in a bunch of conversations like that alluded to there, right? Around, you know, more intelligent workloads running at the edge, right? For really customers in tons of verticals, right? No matter what you do, all the fascinating stuff, all the good data comes from out there. So what do I do with it there? What do I send back to HQ into the data center, to the cloud? So doing smarter stuff at the edge matters to customers.
Yeah, it's sort of like a sorting activity, isn't it? I mean, you've created so much data out at the edge. I think about cameras, video. There's so many hours and hours of video data created in stores, out on the highways. You know, we've got cameras everywhere. Backhauling all of that data, storing all of that data, it's kind of useless. You need something to help you make sense of what's valuable, and then transmit that back to somewhere for long-term storage. You don't need to see 3 hours of nothing happening on the roadway.
Well, completely, right? And the edge is where you kind of act on it, right? You change what a sign shows to steer traffic differently. You send someone a message on their app that, hey, you just walked past the green beans and they're on sale this week, and maybe I know that they're on your shopping list or something like that. It gets creepy at some point, but like better data.
I was going to say that's kind of creepy.
I mean, it's Thanksgiving, right? Green beans should be on all of our shopping lists. So,
yes,
I had good odds on that one. Having an associate respond to, you know, someone who's dwelling near the high dollar TVs or something like that, right, is where you have to act. So then, can we make those smarter decisions more locally and have less data to drag over the pipe each way to get analyzed and acted on?
Absolutely. Ben, as you talked with Pi, you had a great conversation about the way that Nutanix sort of sees the world and the way you're approaching these problems. As we kind of dive into the topic, what sort of stands out from that conversation that you'd want folks listening to know?
So it was interesting because I will be the first to admit I'm not an AI expert. I know enough to be dangerous and to have a limited conversation. So that's kind of bugged me. You know, we've got this GBT in a box product. I want to make sure that I'm talking about it effectively, and that, you know, I can, you know, my customers trust that I've got their interest at hand. And the thing that Pi really explained to me was that, you know, a workload is a workload is a workload. So I understand the basic concept of our HCI products, how our clusters work, how workloads runs on that cluster. So the first thing he said to me is, don't overcomplicate what the workload is. Of course, the workload, the app's going to be doing all these marvelous things, but from a architectural, conceptual topic, the workload is like any other workload running on one of our clusters. So that made me feel good that I understand the foundation. Now, the edge, what was interesting there is you look at the different industries that are starting to depend on AI. You know, healthcare is one, but like, look at manufacturing, look at like quality control, where they're actually looking at making decisions online in time and real time on the fly, as things with products. Like one of our customers was talking about that they were looking at using AI to look at things like, okay, a location is buying these products, but what products are they not buying? And are we delivering those products that are just sitting on the shelf or in the back of a warehouse doing nothing? So that's something that's going to be on the edge that's going to need to be tabulated in somewhat of a real-time experience. And that's where I really see where our solution kind of comes at play. The other big thing about AI that, you know, Pi was kind of telling me about is security has become a big concern for people, because as cool as it is for AI to be able to reach out to the data sets, you know, you have to have data behind these engines to drive them. Mm-hmm. Controlling that access to data. And, you know, when you start looking at, protected data or data that's very crucial, like I think of research data at the company I came from, they only wanted a select few or processes to get to that data. Knowing that AI can help them analyze that, you got to be careful who's allowed to pipe in that into that or not. So kind of setting the stage from a architectural understanding that this is just like any other workload that would run on our clusters, and the security that needs to wrap around that, and how it's being used at the edge, and how it really can make a difference to an organization in their operation when they can bring this in real time and being able to run it locally on one of our clusters.
Yeah, you pull out security, and I think that's an interesting one to talk about, because you talk about the security of the data set, and who has access to that. We've been down this road before, you know, when SharePoint brought universal search, and we pointed it at our file shares. Well, people had access to a lot of data that they didn't know they had access to, but now because of search, now they're seeing it. And so we got better at securing our file shares because of that problem. The same thing is true when we talk about data governance and AI. I think we have that unknown problem of too much permission for so many users in our organizations, and it's going to surface that. But you're right, you have to have data sets sitting behind it. Jaira, as you hear Ben talk through that, I mean, what are the advantages here to the Nutanix stack, and particularly to the edge AI ML use case?
Well, conveniently for all four of us, there's a great list here, even sorted for us with those strengths, right? So to paint a word picture for our listeners here, right, you can find this blog post. It's on our Nutanix.dev blog, Nutanix.dev in your browser. But so we've touched on security, right? We've understood that for a long time, that it's an inherent strength of the platform, the way that we ship our controller VMs, which run the storage fabric, the control plane, and of course, even the hypervisor, when you pick our hypervisor, all in a secure fashion. So if that one's been thoroughly covered, let's touch on form factors, right? So since we're just a software-defined solution running on a wide array of hardware, right, of all shapes and sizes, this means we can even reach down for stuff that is tiny and more convenient to run at the edge, right? So we don't necessarily need to ask customers for 4-post racks and 220 power, right? We know that at the edge, this needs to look like an edge-sized solution. So since we just run on software, we can certainly offer that as well.
Yeah, I love the call out here for the Lenovo HX 1021. It's a little baby server. I mean, it looks almost like a Blade server. If you're familiar with what Blades looked like, you know, when they were first introduced, you know, decade, 12, 15 years ago. But it's a full system and it's purpose built for the edge. So it's a really cool form factor that I'm a huge fan of. I went ahead and just kind of pulled it up here. I don't think there's a photo. Oh, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
So if you're watching the video on YouTube, you can kind of see a photo of it. But it's definitely a differentiated form factor in my mind.
That little box like, is like freestanding.
In some ways, it's like the guts of a really beefy laptop, right? So
yeah,
a couple of extra SSDs, a couple of extra NIC options. You know, you could hang it on a wall. You could, they have to show them with these things all stand up like books with bookends, literally holding them together. So
I was going to say. It looks like a book.
Form factor.
It's not much bigger than the size of a keyboard, honestly. You know, was up at Lenovo headquarters. They've got a petting zoo where you can touch all these things in their headquarters. it's about the size of a full-size keyboard. That's about the size we're talking here. Yeah, and that's the power of software, right? I mean, you point that out, Gyra. It's able to adapt to the use case. And you think manufacturing has been mentioned. I mean, quality control, all sorts of different places that you can apply the workload. You know, as we go through the rest of this list, it's talking about workload resiliency, you know, multi-workload support. That's all table stakes for you guys. You know, HCI gives you that great substrate to be able to run, you know, any sort of a workload, including containers. And that's where we come to a conversation about Kubernetes, which may be a little bit foreign to people listening. We've talked about it a couple of times here on the podcast, but I mean, I guess it doesn't hurt to kind of take a step back and talk, what are Kubernetes? What is that technology all about? Gyra,
sure, I mean, yeah, at its heart, I mean, it's about scheduling your containerized workloads, right? So, and defining availability requirements for them to say, I need 15 of this kind of container running, I need 12 of that kind of container running, or when I have a new version of a container, how do I roll that out into production, right? Either all at once or drain that in over time, but ultimately get back to what I've declared my containerized infrastructure needs to look like. And that, of course, has huge impacts on you know, edge workloads, on AI, ML as well, right? So I talked to a manufacturing customer last week where they're looking to roll out their, you know, control systems on containerized platforms out at the edge, right? So where they would have used to been a physical machine, then became a VM, now has become a container at the edge as well. You know, so kind of right-sizing what does the workload really need, but not really changing the availability model for it, right? So with this use case for edge and for AI and ML, what that really means is we can let our customers run and deploy AI workloads really whatever way they need to, right, for the business and for the right kind of workload. So you can run AI in a VM, and we do that with like the PyTorch framework. You can run that in a pod, and we do that with like Kubeflow, right? So we can kind of match either kind of availability model, the VM or the container. Both run great, and it's more like what fits your application better.
And it also points out here, you're giving customers choice. They don't have to standardize on your Kubernetes engine, NKE. But you've also got support in here for others.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the actual business of running those containers honestly more closely needs to align with like your software management and your control plane. That can be us. It can be something else. It's not us. And either way, we're a great platform to run the actual workload itself.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Zero touch deployment, remote deployment. I mean, this is a huge one, and it's one where, you know, we were on workshops on that. You know, how do you foundation? How do you create those clusters? And Harvey, I'm going to throw it to you. I mean, how much value does that zero touch deployment add for a customer experience?
I mean, a lot. And I'm sure that comes as no surprise to you. You know, being able in technology period, you know, we've gone from the days of everything having to be sneaker net where you deploy by actually carrying it out there. You talked earlier about the Lenovo HX and its size. You don't want to, you know, send somebody halfway across the country carrying one of those to go deploy it and put it in. You want to be able to find a way to deploy it remotely, be able to do that effectively, consistently, and actually have a method that you can knock out a bunch of them from one place, not just you got to travel 50 places to put 50 of them in.
Yeah. You and I have both done that. I mean, previous roles, I mean, a lot of travel. We got a lot of status out of that travel, doing it the old school way. And now, yes. Maybe you can use remote hands, someone to, you know, local to where you're trying to do this deployment. They can do it because we've simplified the deployment. We, you know, Nutanix has given us a much easier model that can be carried out by less skilled staff, you know, generalists, yes, or contractors.
Yes. Well, there's please, also again, the blue to the blue, the green to the green, the red to the red, and send me a message to let me know it's there so I can check to make sure it's done.
Absolutely. Well,
and also what makes this key, man, is consistency. You know that everything's being done the same way every single time, every single site.
Yes.
Harvey, you know that I was a big proponent of, man, give me a cookie cutter. If I can get my model into a cookie cutter, then I can stamp that thing out as many times as you want. So as you want to grow big, we can stamp big. So that, to me, when I see this Zero Touch deployment, I appreciate the automation. I appreciate all those things. But what I appreciate more than anything is the consistency that every time it's done with the same level of action that as a manager or a C-level, I know that all the sites are going to look very similar to each other across from an architectural standpoint.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's not just day one, right? I mean, it also applies to, you know, day two, day 90, you know, having to grow a cluster, having to increase resources. You can also do that with zero downtime. No need to take a service, you know, a cluster out of service and make changes to it. You can just add a node. That linear scale is a huge value proposition here.
Now, I am going to throw out a bone to my conversation with Pi. We're talking about AI and ML in our clusters, but really you're still talking about the Nutanix story. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to downsize the AI ML conversation, but again, when I first started talking to Pi and I was talking about artificial intelligence, I was really like, you know, I'm scared to talk about this. And he reassured me that it's just like any other workload. So for Nutanix customers, our future Nutanix customers, again, we're treating AI and ML workloads just like we would databases, VDI, any of it. All the rules still apply to these workloads, even though they're doing, you know, artificial intelligence in the application set. So that gave me some comfort. And as I'm going through this list, his words are ringing out to me going, it's just another workload.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's important to understand. It's a different kind of workload, but it is still just a workload in the sense of the infrastructure underneath is still standardized. There are a couple places where you're doing interesting things, like, you know, support for storage on Kubernetes, containers, persistent storage, those kinds of things, right, Jaira? I mean, there are definitely places where you're also adding value to that story.
Oh, 100%, right? So the apps of the past, right, ran on physical servers, then they moved to VMs. Apps of tomorrow are going to run on containers. And parallel to all of this, the mainframe is still not really dead. Right. So, you know, shifts happen over a long, long time in the industry. And that's the beauty of the platform that can run more than one thing at a time. Right. So, you know, for some customers, I typically kind of tend to set a high level filter on the conversation around the apps that you develop in-house have the most chance in the next 3 to 5 years of running in containers because you control the source code, you have autonomy there, right? The apps that you purchase, right, or purchased and is given to you to run, the least chance, right? Those things, of course, are probably going to stay in VMs for quite a long time. The support model might even dictate that. So given that there's some kind of blend here, right, that's not 0, 100 or 100-0 for most customers, how do we solve this, right? Well, you probably would luck out by having an infrastructure that can do both at once, right? Because you don't want a silo for just your containers and a silo for just your VMs. And then, oh, hope I got the blend right there. Like this can just be one platform that runs the entire business. And as that ratio changes over time, right, probably hopefully growing more on the container side, shrinking on the VM side, but maybe not. Then, of course, the platform adapts there along with you.
So there's a great visual here, and I know the people listening can't see this, so definitely go out and take a look at the blog post. But
pull over here safely to the side of the road.
Yeah, we will talk through this just a little bit. The model here kind of presented is deploy in the cloud, fine tune it, then run it on premises. Why that approach?
So usually the AI training is where most of the horsepower is needed, right? That's why certain, GPU stocks are where they are today, right? Is because that's a very GPU heavy activity, right? For the initial training and development of the model. Some of these models even come sort of like, let's say, like pre-trained, or they're at the 90% mark when you install them. And then, there's a couple stages of like refinement and then also execution, right? So maybe there's a tailoring it to maybe your customer data, and then actual execution for doing the actual AI work, right? What are we going to be generating here, right? Are we sampling or inferring customer sentiment over a voice call? Are we, writing better KB articles? Are we supporting a chat bot to give better answers there? Are we watching, we talked about it here on this conversation, watching camera output to say, let's infer some intent here and dwell time in space, whether that's, helping out with self-checkout or people in aisles or traffic on a highway or whatever. So different kinds of use cases for different kinds of hardware, but commonly training at the edge is not the right use case, right? It's usually trained in the data center, trained in the cloud, refined in the data center commonly next to your actual data, and then run at the edge next to where all the fire hose of data feeds are from the cameras, from the sensors, from the other kind of inputs there.
So make it smart in the cloud with the biggest data, and then apply it to the edge and try to get the best insights out of the edge.
100%.
So we are talking that retail example. The blog post goes on to talk about that. What can we learn from this example?
The sound of me reading only slightly ahead of Philip here to all of our listeners. No, it's
so curveball for Jaira. Sorry about that.
Happy end of Monday to everyone out there. It calls out a great use case here for this customer. This example is a retailer with, say, 2,000 stores. It talks about the reality, right? That they're not maybe all identical, right? So, 700 of them or so is what this calls out. A chunk of them, right? Let's say 700 are way larger, higher revenue, right? They're probably more tier one stores. You might have more that are also tier two, but this means that your deployment on Nutanix at the edge can actually look like the real world, right? Where they're not all the same, but managing them does not mean living in two camps, right? I don't have team A and team B, or silo A and silo B. This is just all Nutanix, whether it's going to run containers, whether it's going to run VMs, whether it's going to run both, have GPUs, not have GPUs, be running VMs or be running AI workloads, right? All that standardization of how do I deploy it rapidly at the edge? How do I support it? How do I enable my team to deliver it to the business and productize it? All gets standardized, all gets repeatable.
Yeah, ultimately kind of leans back to what Ben was talking about earlier. You have the infrastructure set up, you manage the infrastructure, and you let the workloads be the workloads. It's just another workload.
And it's just another data set at the end of the day. We talk about the power of the Nutanix platform, and it really is around data portability. It's around being able to move that data easily between systems and get the most value out of it. And again, that rings true here in this conversation. You have the same data services underlying it, so it's easy to get that data back into a centralized place and make use of it there as well.
Yeah, no matter what you want to run, right? VMs or containers, it's not an either or choice, right? It's a both and, it's a what's right for you, right? It's a, when the waiter says, creme brulee or bread pudding for dessert, right? It's there's not right or wrong. It's personal preference.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, that's what's neat. I know the viewers can't see this, and I definitely invite them to go look at this on the webpage. But if you look at that picture there and you look kind of at the stack, Nutanix AOS is the base. I mean, that's the base of the platform for anything you're going to do with Nutanix with AOS. That's the base of this platform. So not to, drive Pi's words into the ground, but again, man, our basic offerings are what's covering us being able to do this. So if you're running Nutanix Float, you already know what the goodness is of running AI in Nutanix world. If you're looking at Nutanix, we're AI enabled and ready to jump in that arena with you securely. And, you know, man, we're looking at putting some of these tool sets in the cloud. One of the conversations that I had with Pi, not to get too far futuristic for us, is, man, our CVM is building more intelligence into it. And the CVM in certain cases in the cloud is being repurposed because it no longer has to talk to the hardware like it used to. So security, data governance, you know, man, looking myopically at the data of what's going on are all things that we're building inside of our CVM. So more goodness to come. But again, it just fits into what we're doing today and where our roadmap is going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the integration points, the way that you leverage the platform is key here. You've got a great foundation from a storage perspective, but you've extended upon that with things like files and objects. Now you've got integration points to Kubernetes for containers and persistent storage. And oh yeah, Ben, you were talking about that consistency of deployment for the Nutanix cluster. That's what Kubernetes is all about. That's what containers are all about, is that consistently deployed application running wherever you need to run it, locally at the edge, in the cloud, all of those things just lead back to a better, more consistent operating environment for your customer. And again, I know we talked about a lot of different use cases here, but in this article, it's specifically talking about generative AI, which again, takes all of that unstructured data and indexes it and makes use of it and then turns it into a usable format. And so I do kind of want to hit on that, I guess, you know, primer for AI in general. Generative AI is something different, right? And so I'll throw it to you, Jaira, hopefully not a curveball, but I mean, the generative AI thing is a little different. You know, this is the ChatGPT, the things that do work for you on your behalf. What's a little different there?
Right. So to call back to something Ben said at the beginning, right? So like, if you're listening to this and if you're not an AI expert, don't worry, we're not either, right? So you're in good company there. And you know, people that are AI experts work at the AI startups, right? And everyone else is just running kind of what they build. But in general, yeah, like, you know, is Google intelligent? Absolutely, right? And it's just matching what you typed in with like a search query result. This new crop of stuff, right, in the last 12 months or so, it's all about creating something that didn't exist before, right? Whether that's in text, whether that's an understanding or a linkage or a connection, or even visuals, right? So think about, of course, ChatGPT is the easy example, DALL-E and all the other things that can either give you a text or an image or even audio. That's one of my new favorite hobbies when I go YouTube dumpster diving now, is this AI-generated pop music, right? Do you want to hear Johnny Cash singing I'm losing all my names here, Taylor Swift songs? Because like, it's actually amazing, right? So there's a whole channel that just does AI Johnny Cash singing Taylor Swift songs, right? So all these things about creating things that didn't used to exist is all what this Gen AI category is for, right? So whether it's, you know, text, audio, image, you know, full on movie, that's what is all in this category.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as funny as it is, my daughter came in with some app that was called Face Swap or something like that. And, you know, it moves your face or someone else's face onto a different photo. And now you can just feed in a few sentences describing what you want, and output, you've got a photo of Harvey riding a unicorn, you know, out in space. So, you know,
another one? I already had one of those.
This is where I start turning into the old curmudgeon. Like, I don't like these things.
It's going to be your Christmas card, Harvey. I want to see a Christmas card of you riding a unicorn in space, my man. I can see it now.
We've been touching on like the real world use cases for actual businesses for these things throughout the whole podcast, right? Around, hey, I have camera data, but what's the part of my camera data I want to go act on, right? I've got customers that are sending me emails or chats for customer support. How do I get those people an answer faster, right? The customer experience matters more than anything these days, right? So getting your customers to a better experience, better answer faster, really gives your company a competitive edge, right? So what this does is this helps our customers, right? People that we at Nutanix, people at Zintegra talk to, go and talk to their line of business owners and mm-hmm. say, we can now give you an AI platform to get there faster, right? That doesn't just involve, hey, go to public cloud, rent forever. And if your edge site loses its internet connectivity, it's SOL, right? We're like, hey, there's a new way to do AI here that actually can work disconnected, is easily manageable. You can run it in the cloud, but you probably want to run it at the edge actually for faster answers without needing a small army of folks to manage all this.
Yeah, I mean, from prior job, this has been probably 9 years ago. Yeah, you know, I found it really interesting that we could put cameras in a site and it could count the number of people, the foot traffic coming in and out of a location. As a retail person, you want to know how much foot traffic do you have in your sites. And it's only gotten better since then. So now I know there are stores that are looking at and analyzing their layout. Where do they have hotspots? Where do people stop? Where are they attracted to? And all of that data goes back into designing better experiences that drive better outcomes for each of those businesses. So it's a huge upside for companies to start looking into ways to leverage AI and the data that they have. You know, they may already have that security camera data. They probably already have lots and lots of cameras in their locations. Now,
yeah,
you can actually put that to valuable use.
Yeah, they went from how much foot traffic are we having every day to why is Phil in here buying beef jerky 3 times a day?
Like for us on the sales side, you know, it's helping us tremendously because they're now doing AI and they're looking at, you know, what are customers buying, what are trends in our product portfolio. I mean, it's really helping us as a company go, okay, what products are really landing with our customers and what as a sales team should we be out there talking about? You know, sales gets to be a dirty little word, but some of the things that they're doing are really allowing our company to address our customers' needs. And so, man, AI is coming everywhere, but in different verticals, it's used different ways. I've already seen it affecting my vertical, and some of it's cool, man. I look at it and go, that's pretty killer. Now, there's the whole dark side, and we won't go there, but there's always two sides to every coin, my friend.
Yeah, and I may have talked about it on this podcast, but I think it applies here. There's a fast food retailer who transitioned during COVID to using an app for orders. And the outcome for them was being able to have that data, know more personally what people buy more often, target things, you know, to drive additional sales, but also know where they need additional capacity, that drive, you know, more drive-through capacity, more people working, what time of day, you know, staffing, all of those kinds of things is outfall of being able to have that data. I guess the underline there is data is king. That is the end all be all for us is data. And, you know, the businesses that are going to succeed in the future, they're the ones that know how to leverage that data and differentiate themselves using it. Well, guys, I think this is a great place for us to stop. I really appreciate the conversation. It's always great to have a chat with Ben, with Jaira, and with Harvey. We appreciate you guys joining us today. And anything you want to share before we wrap up? Last words?
I appreciate you guys letting me be here. I know I missed a few, and thank you for having me back. And great conversation. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, always great to have you, Ben.
This is probably a poor reflection on me as a podcaster, but no, I can't think of anything to plug. So everyone have a great week.
Yeah, everybody have a great week. Thank you guys so much for joining us, and we'll see you on the next Nutanix Weekly. Have a great afternoon.